Afternoon, and thank you all for coming. As we continue our community's efforts to reduce the spread of COVID-19, the Columbia Boone County Public Health and Human Services Director Stephanie Browning issued Order 2020-09 on Friday, August 8th, and it became effective yesterday. Because we continue to see cases rising, both locally and statewide, because our positivity rate remains above 5%, because our rolling 7-day average of new cases reached 34% on August 1st, some minor additional restrictions were placed on businesses open to the public. We remain on phase 2, step 3 of our reopening plan, which went into effect June 23rd, and we continue to monitor the data to determine what our next steps will be to protect the health and safety of our community. But as summer fades and we turn towards fall, new challenges await us. The return of thousands of college students and the return to school for thousands of children will require us to be ever vigilant and to be prepared to change directions quickly if needed, to ensure our community's health and well-being during this pandemic. When I spoke to you on April 8th, we committed to lead with the epidemiology based on data and science and not public opinion or political pressure. We are coordinating and communicating with each other and with you in our community to be prepared and not panic. And to remember our values and show compassion, we must continue to be unwavering in these commitments. I have asked local leaders in healthcare and education to share with us today their thoughts and plans to restart education activities in Columbia, how we will manage new cases, when we will tap the brakes, and how the community can help achieve what we all want: a safe and steady return for students to Columbia. I want to invite Stephanie Browning, Director of Columbia and Boone County Health and Human Services, to provide a brief update to date on our efforts and what we might expect in the future. Director Browning?
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you, Mayor. The COVID pandemic has taught me that no man or woman works alone. It takes the strength of countless people to keep a community together and thriving in the face of adversity. For me, 2020 continues to be a year of partnerships. I want to start out by acknowledging my employees. They've always displayed great teamwork, providing services to our residents. Working through this pandemic has been no different. In many cases, staff have taken on completely different roles in response to the pandemic as compared to their normal duties. They have quickly adjusted work processes to maintain the services that some of our most vulnerable citizens need. They've proven their versatility, adaptability, and most of all, their commitment to this community that they love. They make me proud. Our partnerships with the education community have always been strong, and this year has shown us how invaluable they are to the public health of our community. Over the last several months, we've worked closely with public and private schools throughout Boone County as they develop and refine their plans for the coming school year. And in the midst of this, we are working together right now to prepare for our school-based influenza vaccine clinics, which start next month. We've worked with the University of Missouri, Columbia College, Stevens College, and Moberly Area Community College as they plan for the return of students. One example of a partnership is with the University of Missouri. They've hired employees to do case investigations and contact tracing for their students living on campus. Our continued ability to work together is so essential at this time. We continue meeting regularly with our hospital partners, and on a daily basis, we collectively monitor our healthcare system's capacity to respond. This includes monitoring ICU beds, ventilators, personal protective equipment, testing capacity, and their staffing. We've always had a strong partnership with our hospitals, and I believe we will come out of this pandemic even stronger than ever. Our business community continues to be a partner in helping to ensure the health and safety of all who shop, eat, and visit Columbia. We're grateful for their adaptability and willingness to learn more about how to safely operate during this difficult time. Moving forward, we will continue to build our capacity. With the support of the Boone County Commission, Public Health and Human Services will receive just under $1.8 million of CARES Act funding to hire additional disease investigators, contact tracers, communicable disease specialists, health educators, data analysts, and data entry staff, plus the equipment needed for all these positions. The commission has also approved additional funding to assure that testing for uninsured individuals in our community is available. While Public Health and Human Services and our community partners continue to work together, we need to do more. The most important piece of the puzzle are the residents of this community. Each of us as individuals have the power to protect ourselves and others from this virus by making small choices every day. Social distancing from others, regularly washing our hands, staying home when sick, and wearing a mask when around others are simple yet highly effective tools that we have to fight this virus. Sometimes it's easy to find ourselves slipping back into old habits, but we need to be diligent now more than ever before. More than 55% of cases in Boone County are due to having close contact with someone with COVID. Sometimes we let our guard down and we go around people that we know and we care about. But that one hug or that one gathering, that could be the time you spread the virus to someone else. It's been a difficult 6 months in this community, and I know it feels like the status of the pandemic changes every day. We are literally watching the scientific process play out in real time. We will continue to make decisions based on science, and that means that the guidance may change. We're asking you to lean in, partner with us as we navigate this next chapter. So now I'd like to invite Dr. Mary Beck, Chief Nursing Officer with MU Healthcare, and one of our partners to share her insight. Thanks.
Thank you, Stephanie, and thank you, Mayor, for hosting this today. I think it's really important for our community. Good afternoon, and thank you again. MU Healthcare is very prepared. Our COVID response plan and incident command structure has been in place since early March. We are prepared for continuing care of our community and the students as they return. We want you to be very confident in that. We have protocols in place to keep our patients and staff safe. This includes requiring masks and screening of all who enter our facilities for a temperature and symptoms. We also consistently monitor supplies as well as the capacity of our facilities and our workforce. We review bed and staff availability as well as our PPE, personal protective equipment, blood supplies and ventilators, and many other supplies on a daily basis. MU Healthcare has flexibility to adapt as the needs of our community changes or as the COVID pandemic prevalence rate in our community rises. Specifically, we could adapt by canceling non-emergent procedures, which we did in the spring, further limiting visitors. We had limited totally. We have gone back to a moderate restrictions, further conserving the PPE, personal protective equipment, by limiting the number of students in clinical experiences. And they need that hands-on experience, but we had to do that in the spring also. We can adjust our staffing, adjust space in our facilities to open up additional beds, and establish additional testing sites. Safety is our top priority. Let me say that again. Safety is our top priority. As the region's leader in treating infectious diseases, including COVID-19, we have used our expertise to ensure we're providing safe options for in-person care in addition to virtual care options. Again, we screen all employees, patients, and visitors for signs of illness when entering our facilities. We require all patients with scheduled procedures or surgeries that will require sedation to be tested for COVID-19 pre-procedure. We require all staff, patients, and visitors to wear masks in our facilities. We have rearranged our waiting areas to maintain 6 feet of social distancing and to keep those who are ill separated from those who are well. Patients with COVID-19 are isolated and cared for by highly specialized teams in dedicated areas of our hospital. We, in support of what Dr. Stephanie Browning, our leader, has said for public health, we must remain vigilant as a community. Please continue to wear masks, practice social distancing, wash your hands, and stay home if you are ill. Thank you for being here. Thank you, Mayor Treese.
Thank you, Dalton. Well, we are fortunate to have an excellent public health and human services department, as well as world-class healthcare and hospitals here in Boone County. Their partnerships make us stronger as a community. And it was because of this partnership that we were able to streamline pre-authorization for testing, accelerate the results from testing here at home by using a local provider instead of sending those tests to the health lab, that allow us to get early control, earlier isolation and quarantine, and has helped us see results in Columbia better than those among the state as a whole. Our community is also fortunate to have world-class educational institutions. As I mentioned, it's that time of year when students of all ages make their way back to school. And this year, the return to school brings new challenges, which we have not witnessed in our lifetime. The University of Missouri has been planning for months to safely return 30,000 students, not only to campus, but to our community. I'm pleased to welcome Dr. Moon Choi, President and Chancellor of the University of Missouri, to share how the university is prepared. Dr. Choi.
Thank you. Good afternoon. I want to thank Mayor Treese, Director Browning, and also Superintendent Stiepelman for being such great partners to the university as we address this pandemic together. And I've been thinking about what this situation represents for public higher education. And it goes without saying that it's probably the most challenging period that we faced in 75 years at the end of World War II. But having wonderful partners with the same objective of creating a safe and healthy Columbia and Boone County has been incredibly rewarding. Now, as I begin my remarks, I am really thinking about two things. One is pride, and the other is gratitude. And pride in the ability of our faculty members to quickly pivot and do things that they've not done before to provide a high-quality education for our students. And for our students for being so resilient to weather the storm and continue with their studies. And our records indicate that at Mizzou, we expect to have an enrollment in the fall that is higher than the enrollment we had last year. And I cannot say enough about the pride and gratitude that I have for the first responders that we have in this community that's reflected in our nurses, doctors, and support staff in all of the hospitals, but especially at MU Healthcare. They've given of themselves to protect our community, and I'm so proud of them. Now, as a university, we have several very important missions, and that includes student success, research and creative works, and engagement. But now I believe we need to add in there health and safety as a very important element that undergirds the foundations of what we do at a university. So for this semester coming up, we created a very effective plan for reintegrating 30,000 students and about 10,000 faculty and staff back on the campus. As part of that effort that we call Show Me Renewal, we are limiting the size of classes that can be held face-to-face. And when we combine the face-to-face to what we call the blended approach, using face-to-face and online, that represents 65% of the classes, and purely online is 35% of the classes going forward. Our laboratories, in which our faculty members and students perform the research, will be reconfigured so that we can have proper social distancing and the use of face coverings. Now, it's very important for all of us to recognize that we don't live in an island, and that our actions or lack of actions and accountability for following the procedures can have an impact to this community. So we're communicating very effectively through educational programs as well as enforcement programs so that we have individuals who follow the procedures for face coverings, social distancing, hand washing, and so forth. We are also implementing a very effective app so that our students, faculty, and staff can check their symptoms and provide proof that they checked their symptoms and are ready to come to class or go to work. And all of these efforts are done in a way that we have safe and a healthy university, because the work that we do is so important, not only for education, but the economic vitality of this community. So I look forward to answering your questions, and thank you very much for your support.
Thank you, Dr. Choi. Columbia Public Schools has also been partnering with healthcare professionals and the community for months to ensure that our youngest students are able to safely return to the classroom and have ample opportunities for online learning. I welcome Dr. Peter Stiepelman to the podium.
Thank you, Mayor. And truly, as others have said, thank you for hosting this. I know that there are a lot of questions for the community, and to be together and coordinated really demonstrates what has been true for us, is that we do this work together. I've just come back from a virtual meeting of the Northwest Rotary. That is the Rotary of the Superintendents of Columbia for a very long time. Russ Thompson was a member, Jim Ritter was a member, Chris Belcher was a member. And at that conversation of this virtual Zoom meeting of the Rotary, they asked me what was different now, not in terms of all the vision that we had for where we were going for this coming year, but what was different about June when the school district released its plan on June 22nd, and we offered two choices to families. We said, we've heard from our community, and 80% of our community wants to be in school full-time, 5 days. And so we offered 5 days full-time or online. And so what is different is that March and April and May and June revealed really promising data for our community in terms of the rate of infection, the rate of cases. When we looked at five-day averages that you can see on the Boone County website, everything looks so promising for our return. And July was a very different story. And as July continued to march along, we started to see very much increased rates, and it began to worry us. I know it has worried the University of Missouri, which is why, as you just heard, they put together a robust plan in terms of their return. And so we had to pivot as well. And so last night, the Board of Education met, and they authorized the additional tool for the administration so that we could offer full-time 5 days if the data supported it, which currently it does not. They authorized us to institute a hybrid in-person model, which would help us reduce our enrollment by 50% in our classrooms and in our buses. It would allow us to social distance which is the most important thing that we can be doing. Wear your mask and socially distance. The WHO, the American Association of Pediatrics, both say between 3 and 6 feet. So that's what we had, that was our task. Last Tuesday, the board had a special session of a board meeting, and we were grateful to both Dr. Milham and to Director Browning for being present and for guiding the board on some really pointed questions, which was, can we actually have a 5-day full day if we can't socially distance? And the answer was, we don't recommend it. And so the board gave us the authority last night to have a hybrid in-person model, which would at least get us to have children in the schools. And for elementary school classrooms, we're talking between 6 and 13 children in a classroom, which is a wonderful opportunity for teachers to be able to individualize instruction. We know how important in-person school is in terms of making sure that our children, 1 in every 2 who participate in free and reduced lunch, have access to their school. For children who participate or are eligible for special education services, to get those services in school, because for so many, a virtual environment is not ideal for their learning. And so we'll have now 3 options, and we're going to use a model that comes from a state north of here. I've been told to stop referring to the state because we live in Missouri and not Minnesota. So we will be using a model that looks at, gives us clear direction and allows us to anchor our decisions in data. So if there are 0 to 9 cases over a 14-day period, looking at the per day rate over per 10,000 people, then we can have full day in person 5 days a week. If in fact we find ourselves between 10 and 49, then that says to us, look, our model has to be a hybrid model. And when we find ourselves over 50, that puts us purely in an online situation in terms of our format. We think this helps our community understand where the district stands. On our website, there will be a daily indicator that one can look at to see what the rate is. And then each 3 weeks, when the city makes their announcement about their reopening plan, we will coordinate our plan with theirs so that the community can get their information in a one-stop shop at one time to understand what is the city doing, what is the schools doing, because we are all the city. So I want to say, I guess in closing, is that anyone who thinks that we want our kids back in school. There's no argument about that. The university would love to have their kids in school and not have to think about what does it look like if things don't go well. So we all have an obligation. I think that's probably the driving force of why the mayor has us here all today in terms of this invitation. We should wear our masks. We should socially distance. We should take care of each other and do our very best until there is a vaccine, that we have to do our very best in terms of social distancing and practicing good practices. So anyway, thank you for the opportunity, Mayor, and I am sure there'll be some questions, and I'd be happy to stay to answer them.
Thank you, Dr. Stiepelman, and Director Browning, and Dr. Mary Beck, and Dr. Choi for your leadership and sharing with us today and your partnership. Our community is strong, and it is strong because of the commitment of caring leadership, of people who strive to do the right thing for everyone, including students and community members, healthcare professionals, businesses, and visitors. But we are all in this together, and to continue moving forward, we all have to be partners. We must follow the data and science to guide us, all of us, to make the best decisions with the information we have and to implement strong policy and practice. There are other community challenges which we face health-wise. It's our regular influenza season is soon approaching, and science says this year more than ever, get your flu shot. Early evidence supports flu shots, also reducing the risk of infection or the severity of COVID-19. Immunizing our community against influenza will utilize many of the same resources we are using to combat the COVID-19 pandemic. And remember, none of us are in this alone. Our individual actions affect the health and safety of everyone, be it your loved ones or your neighbors. For our returning college students, I urge you to resist house parties where no social distancing is taking place and face coverings are not being worn. Be responsible at bars and restaurants, and that goes for all of us. Social distancing, face coverings, and groups of less than 10 help ensure we don't see a super spreader event in Columbia, Missouri. Each of our actions also help ensure our small businesses that are already under pressure can continue to operate and provide the services we all desire, such as eating out and shopping. Each of our actions can also be the reason that sporting events and festivals and conferences occur or don't occur. It's up to each of us. One event which leads to a dramatic increase in cases due to this behavior could potentially end in classroom activities. And that would have a ripple effect in our community, with establishments closing, employees laid off, a shortage of childcare, and workforce challenges. I continue to urge each of you to take the simple steps we know are most effective and the simplest tools we have to combat both COVID-19, influenza, and other respiratory ailments. Social distance. Wear a face covering when you cannot social distance. Wash your hands frequently. Cough or sneeze into a tissue and then dispose of it, or cough and sneeze into your elbow. Wipe down high contact touch points frequently. And if you're feeling ill, stay at home. Don't go to school or work. Call your healthcare provider before going to see them. As we go about our daily lives and as we welcome our students and visitors back to our community this fall, please aspire to adhere to our principles of community. As you've heard today, schools, colleges, universities, and businesses have all been planning for this fall's return to schools. And together we will ensure that our children receive exceptional educational opportunities while taking all of the necessary safety precautions. Thank you again for attending. We do have a few minutes for questions from the audience and the media. We'll use the handheld microphones to make sure everybody can hear who's listening online.
I have a question for CPS Superintendent Peter Stiepelman, please. Superintendent Stiepelman, this is a question from Lucas Geisler with ABC 17 News. How is the virus spreading in kids under the age of 14, and how do you intend to work with students who do test positive in a classroom?
Right. So I think your first part of your question is probably better addressed to our public health officials, because if I don't say it enough, there's not a moment that Stephanie Browning and her team don't answer the phone, don't answer a call, provide guidance, counsel, and for that we're grateful. I can tell you that one of the things we were looking at that Dr. Milham referenced recently last week is that what was once understood to be lower transmission rates among younger students may not necessarily be true, and that they may be transmitting just as high a rate as older students, which is one of the reasons why our hybrid model is for all students and not a phased-in process that we're seeing our colleagues in Kansas City pursuing. That doesn't mean that we won't consider it in the future. To answer your question about what happens if a student tests positive, I think you have to take a couple of steps back, because there's so many what-if scenarios, right? What if it was a child was at his baseball game and was tested positive there? Or what happens if the child is feeling sick and goes to the school nurse? So I'll use that scenario if that's all right. So a child doesn't feel well, they go to the school nurse. Dr. Browning and her team have really worked hard with us, and I know they're having a tabletop exercise this Friday to continue to look at what does contact tracing look like. So what will happen is that the school nurse has a protocol in looking at, you know, lots of kids come to the nurse with just a cough or with a fever. I mean, that happens all the time. So looking at their protocols and deciding whether or not they suspect that potentially the child has COVID, at which point the child would be separated. And there is we're using these sort of pop-up, sort of almost like tents as a way just to create a safe space for a child to wait for their parent to come pick them up. At which point the nurse would then recommend that the parent go get testing. At that point, the nurse is contacting her supervisor, who's contacting their principal, who's contacting their assistant superintendent, who contacts me. At which point, we then work with our nursing and safety and security to determine whether or not we need to close the classroom or the hallway or the entire building. So, as you can see, there's a real protocol involved in what we're trying to do. If, in fact, the health department contacts us and lets us know, because we're going to rely on them to let us know, and the fact that they're adding additional contact tracers is super important. And so we're hoping, this is, I think, an idea that Director Browning had, which was to have a liaison who is exclusively working with the schools so that we can get the very best information as quickly as possible. So if we have a positive case, I'm sure you're enjoying this long answer, but sorry, you just asked it as if it were simple, but it's a long one. So let's say we have a positive case, they're going to let us know, and then we'll have to make some determinations on how best we can notify others. Of course, we have obligations under federal law called FERPA. It's very similar to in the hospitals in terms of HIPAA. So we're going to work really closely together to make sure that we can give people information so they can make the very best determination. Then the health department will help us understand who might be considered a close contact, because a contact of a contact does not necessarily equal a contact, right? So it may be, and this is a big reason why we're having assigned seats in our classrooms, so that just like on an airplane, you can look in the row before and behind to determine who might need to get additional testing. So I hope that answers your question.
We know that children under 19 can become infected, especially in the 0 to 14 as well. We're seeing an increase in the number of those cases. Children are, what we've seen thus far is that most of the kids are getting it from the home, right? Mom, dad, someone's at work, sibling has been out, comes back. And what we're really finding is when cases do occur, it's keeping the home safe, the family members or the housemates or whatever, COVID-free, is a challenge. And so that's where most of our cases are coming from now. But we do know that children can transmit the virus.
Director Browning, if you could stay up there for me. Just a quick question. And then I'll go to the mayor, too. Director Browning, maybe you're walking downtown in Columbia one night. Maybe you walk by a restaurant or you're downtown and you see a large group of young adults not wearing masks, not social distancing. What's your message to them?
My message to them is that if they want to continue being in this place that we love, right? This is a wonderful city. This has got to be a wonderful place for people to come and go to school. If we want to continue to have this, we need to do the right thing and put a mask on.
Let me just follow up on that. I had the opportunity, along with the Chamber of Commerce and the University of Missouri, to speak to 38 downtown bars, restaurants, and apartment owners about 2 weeks ago, the day our mask policy took effect. And our message to them was very candid. We can have one big back-to-school bash and be shut down the rest of the fall and probably throughout the spring, or we can all take those steps to model behavior that is responsible, that follows the guidance of public health professionals, and allows us all, it may not be ideal, it may not be normal, but it allows all of those bars and restaurants and retail stores and apartments to stay open and students to stay in class. And if there's any message I want you to take away from here today, it's that our entire community needs to do their part to model this behavior, to wear a mask, to socially distance, and do those things that we all want. And then, Brian, would you get... Yeah.
And then is there a number that... Obviously, you talked to Director Browning about it, but is there a number in which you start to get nervous as students start to come back? Is that positivity rate, is there a number that you've decided would start to roll things back?
Look, we're always concerned anytime that positivity rate, you know, indicates widespread community transmission. Is there a magic number that we hit the panic button? I think as we beginning, as Dr. Stiepelman indicated, they have a metric. I know Director Browning has a metric, you know, that meets that definition of hotspot, and we need to stay underneath that. But, you know, are cases going to rise? Probably. Are they manageable? At this point, yes. But I also want to look beyond just hospitalization and fatality rates, because the ripple effect of persons who test positive and then that person is off for 14 days, the business they work at may have to close, all of their coworkers, through no fault of their own, are off because one of their customers refused to wear a mask and potentially exposed that restaurant worker or that place of business to COVID-19. And that's why we all need to do our part to continue this safe reopening.
Yes, my question is for Superintendent Stiepelman and for Moon Choi. What level of information will be made public if there's an outbreak in a building or a classroom?
Thank you. Roger, if I may also, I want to make sure I answer something that I forgot to mention before, so I will make sure I get to your question. But I don't think I mentioned the fact that the board last night also determined and decided to adjust our school calendar, and so we will be starting on September 8th, which is the day after Labor Day. That does give the community and the school district an opportunity to see how we're doing with the return of our students, our college students and university students. And that way, if we were to start in one model, that we're not immediately pivoting to a different model. So September 8th. And then secondly, at the board meeting last night, and I know you were there, I had three of our board members urged and encouraged us not to wait until August 31st to announce what model we will open with. And so we will do that on August 24th. And then for every other announcement, we will align with the city. So Roger, we've had some test cases throughout the spring and in the summer that have allowed us to work closely with the health department and to design sort of boilerplate letters that allow us, should we have a COVID case, whether it be a staff member or a child, for us to be able to communicate with the community at large. Quite frankly, when you say that we have a positive case at one particular school, what we experienced was an incredible, everybody self-deputized themselves as detectives. And then we found ourselves trying to really protect the individual that we are bound to protect. I know the university approached it in a different way, which I think was probably the right way to do it, which is to make people aware, but in a way that also preserves the dignity of those who are trying to come to terms with being ill. And depending on how they are responding to COVID-19, giving them the dignity to be able to focus on their personal health and not having to also defend themselves in some way, shape, or form. So we will work with the health department. We will use our letter that we have created, and we will try to do it in such a way that gives information so that families can make good decisions and at the same time honor and value those who work for us or the children who attend our schools. And I'm sure President/Chancellor, how do you go? What do you, is it when you're here, you're president, and then it's, can I just call you President Choi? Okay.
So in terms of reporting, we're gonna follow the procedure that we currently have, which is to work with Director Browning and make sure that that information is provided in the aggregate to the community. Now, if I can give you a scenario, let's say that we have a class, in-person classroom with about 20 students, but the students in that class are all wearing face coverings and they're spaced 6 feet apart. And a faculty member is standing at least 6 feet back, they wear a face covering and they can also wear a face shield. In that environment, our understanding working with the Boone County, Columbia Boone County Health Department is that if a student tests positive, the other students and the faculty members are not considered to have been in close contact. And so they do not have to go into isolation, quarantine, or get tested. So in that particular case, we're going to ask the student to contact the university so that the faculty member is aware and provide the level of support, whether it's access to the online version or homework or other assignments that can be done remotely. And so that is the procedure that we're going to be using, not only in the classroom, but also in the office setting, as well as research labs. So we will report our information to the Boone County Columbia Public Health Department. In terms of making that information known to members in the class, let's say it's a classroom setting, would violate HIPAA and would also violate FERPA. So we want to make sure that we follow those rules while at the same time ensuring that we have a safe learning environment. But as I just mentioned, in that scenario, those students and the faculty members in the classroom are not considered to be in close contact, and that particular student that tests positive will go into quarantining and will be removed from the class.
I don't know who this question is for, maybe Dr. Stiepelman or maybe the mayor. Those parents who are looking at maybe having to provide 3 days of child care rather than five, I think they're challenged with what to do and how to do that. I don't know if you have an answer for that. I asked the mayor because the city, what do you advise for parents that are facing this? And Dr. Stiepelman, the same to you. I think it's a challenge because this is something that they are going to be faced with.
Yeah, I mean, it presents a tremendous workforce challenge, but it also, there's already a shortage of safe, affordable childcare. And when you have to socially distance and keep a stable of children in that childcare setting, you can see how that challenge is magnified. I think that's one of the interests that Dr. Stiepelman has in providing as much advanced notice as possible, so that parents. I mean, it's like having a snow day 5 days in a row. And the challenge that presents, not just for those families, but for those employers, it's something that all of us are going to have grace about right now. Yeah, I don't know if you want to add to it.
I would add that there is a meeting on Thursday with some of the mayor's staff, some of Stephanie's staff, and other entities in the community who are interested in the care of children. So they may be working with them after school during the week, so your Boys and Girls Clubs, the Housing Authority. And we're coming together because while the school district cannot create pods for those days that children are not in school, we certainly want to be at the table to sort of help and figure out how to support. So, for example, we're looking at things like if we have hourly employees that could be used in a way that provides some supervision if we were to be completely out and be on a completely online, because we recognize that while we are not a childcare facility, we are a safe place for children to be while parents are at work and the children are learning. And so while we can't organize the pods, we are certainly looking at how we can participate. So we have a number of our staff who are going to go to that conversation and see how we can help. Because I know that there's organizations like For Columbia, which is part of the faith-based organizations here in town, that are interested in that as well. Because there are families with means who are doing this on their own and hiring college students to come and provide some additional care. But when we are a community of influence and affluence, as well as families who are absolutely struggling, or those who are maybe right now, because of their situation, they're situationally struggling because they've lost their job or their home, this is just one more thing, right? And so we want to be in person. We want to do it safely. And if we can be a part of helping families find adequate and appropriate child care for their kids when they're not in school, then we want to sit at the table and be a part of that conversation.
All right. For Director Browning and maybe the mayor, what positive results, if any, have you seen since the mask ordinance was implemented?
Well, we certainly have seen some days where we've seen some big spikes, and if you actually would go and look over our, you know, our start and the rise that we started to have, when the mask ordinance went into place, we did see a decline. And while the numbers are still above where we want to be, they are definitely better than what they were before the mask ordinance. Do you want to add to that?
Well, look, I think clearly the cases are increasing at a decreasing rate. But that, you know, look, our community is still permeable, and we still have people that come here. That's one of the reasons I thought it was important to do this fully 1 month before students return. It has been 1 month to the day since the mask policy took effect. Students are now beginning to return August 1, starting more intensely tomorrow or the next 8 days, because I thought it was important that we set an expectation as a community, that it is our community ethos to wear a mask, to protect public health, to protect yourself and protect others. And, you know, I think there's a lot of social cue taking here. When people see a majority of others wearing a mask, they choose to wear a mask. When you go to communities where there may not be a mask policy, I think people become a little more relaxed, and that's problematic. I hope that as students return to Columbia, they see that we are a community that values public health, and that part of that is a responsibility to wear a mask. Got time for a couple more questions and then wrap up. Anybody? Thank you.
Director Browning. So, Director, with the students coming back, what sort of, I guess, what's the look of what numbers you can expect? Do you expect to see a certain amount of new cases that you're accounting for? What can we expect when we start to see those cases every 24 hours?
Well, I don't know that we have, like, one hard and fast number. I mean, when you start to bring that many people back into the community, people going back to work, et cetera, you know, they're going to be out. We will see some increase in cases, but again, we can keep that number down if we practice those things, the social distancing, wearing masks, staying home when you're sick, hand washing. I mean, we have some control here if we choose to use it.
This is for Dr. Stiepelman. Dr. Stiepelman, what reaction from the community and teachers have you received after adding the hybrid model option?
As you might expect, what is amazing about living in Columbia is that we have a wide range of perspectives on any given topic. And so you can expect that I have gotten emails of support, of gratitude. I'll start with those, as well as those of derision and frustration. You know, when I pay attention, and I do, the mayor spends a good amount of time talking with other large city mayors because Columbia is a large city. So I know that you spend time and coordinate efforts around public safety and about how to create just amazing livable cities. And so you talk with St. Louis, you talk with Kansas City, you talk with Springfield, and so do I. Because of that, you've really modeled that. And so in talking with the Kansas City superintendent, who is going completely all online, when you look at their numbers, they're above 50, they're about 55 on that scale that we're looking at. When you look at Springfield, that also tried to go 5 day, full day, they had to convert to a hybrid model. When you look at St. Louis, the same thing. When you look at St. Louis County schools, so Rockwood School District, 21,000 students, more conservative community, they've now just moved from hybrid to fully online. Same thing for Lee's Summit, have moved fully online. And so we look at each of these not as a way to just feel better, but to recognize that we're not an outlier. And we recognize that we're dealing with a global pandemic that that requires all of us rowing in the same direction. So to answer your question about what have I received, both praise and frustration. As you might expect, I am a parent of three children who and they are all in the public schools. We've got to figure out the same thing in terms of how do I do my job and juggle their futures in terms of their education. So I hope that answers your question.
Sorry, I should have had you stay up there. I'm just going to ask, can you talk more about the students taking less courses and what you would call a four block?
Oh, the 4x4, right. So this actually came from a group of principals, high school principals, as well as teachers, who indicated that if we were going to move to a hybrid model, that we ought to rethink for this coming year the way that we do school. So typically, a traditional model is to have A days and B days, and so that students take the same course throughout the entire year. In this case, we're going to do a 4x4, which is that a student will take four classes for the entire semester for that full credit. And so they'll take the same class both Monday and Tuesday if they're on a Monday-Tuesday group. So you'll have a hybrid is a group one and group two. So group one will come to school Mondays and Tuesdays, and then Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, they'll be online in terms of their learning. Group two will come Thursday and Friday, and their online learning is Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So if they're taking physics, for example, they'll take that both on Monday and Tuesday, right? And then be online the rest of the day, so the rest of the week. So that's what a 4x4 is. It's an ability for us to make sure that we're seeing our kids each of those 2 days as opposed to just once a week taking their class. They'll be there for those full 2 days, which is not dissimilar from the five-day model in terms of they see their teachers typically every other day.
Thank you for coming today. We appreciate your coverage of this and our message to the community. Thank you.